This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If it weren't for the steady beat of war drums, healthcare would be front and center in the political debate, according to Dr. Marcia Angel. She's the former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine and is a senior lecturer in social medicine at Harvard Medical School. Many doctors and patients agree that our healthcare insurance system is inadequate and dysfunctional. Today we're going to talk about possible ways of fixing it. First, we'll discuss the single-payer plan, which Dr. Angel advocates. She's the head of the Physicians Working Group, which was founded by the Physicians for a National Health Program, an organization of more than 10,000 physicians who support single-payer national health insurance. Also with us is Dr. Quentin Young. He's the national coordinator of Physicians for a National Health Program. He's also a practicing internist and a clinical professor of preventive medicine and community health at the University of Illinois Medical Center. I asked Dr. Young to describe some of the problems he and his colleagues face within the current healthcare system.
Well, there are a number of major problems, starting first with the enormous bureaucracy I have to penetrate each day of work, a bureaucracy of paper and people at the end of the phone giving you permission or denying you permission to do things you need for your patient. There's been an interposition of corporate interests into my very consultation room, which is awful. Beyond that, of course, we have people who don't have the resources, private resources, to get the medication or get the tests that are indicated. That's always a huge strain on a doctor trying to do his best for the patients. Beyond that, you have, and this is probably the harshest criticism I can make, the terms of engagement in the consultation room where the patient and doctor are attempting to solve the patient's problem have been changed. And from a prevailing mood of optimism and hope and confidence and affection, it's been slowly but steadily transformed into one of mistrust, hostility, and even rage. That is inimical to good healthcare events, and I feel that the standard of health in this country faces a decline because of this widespread reality in American medicine practice.
What kind of practice are you in? Do you belong to an HMO or group practice?
I'm a general internal medicine doctor, a primary care doctor, if you please. I'm in a group of eight doctors, all of them wonderful, younger than me doctors. And we practice in a community in Chicago where I started some 50 years ago. I myself am not in any of these HMOs, some of my colleagues do belong to these arrangements. And it's an everyday experience to see how that impinges. Let me give one example of the huge waste. We have about 13 full-time equivalents to service we eight doctors, nurses, technicians, clerical. Fully five of those people are doing nothing but pushing paper to keep the practice afloat, to communicate with the various 1,600 insurance companies. That's how many we have. And when we say single payer, if I may make the definition right now, we speak about one insurance company, which is what we have practically for Medicare, our system for the elderly, which is flawed, but is so much better than the reality for the rest of us who are not in the over 65 government insurance plan. So I see it every day, Terry, in our practice, and it's oppressive, it's confounding, and it really detracts from our ability to give care.
Dr. Angel, you've said if we had set out to design the worst system that we could imagine, we couldn't have imagined one as bad as we have. One or two compelling examples of what makes our current system so bad, in your judgment.
Too few Americans have access to comprehensive health care. In fact, most of us don't have access to comprehensive health care, even when we have what's considered a fairly good insurance policy. So the employers pay a portion, an increasingly small portion, of the premium to health care businesses, largely investor-owned managed care plans. And here the deal is that the managed care plans cover all of the enrollees in the particular workplace for a year for a set premium. And if they can cover these people for less than that premium, they get to keep whatever is left over. And if it costs them for the medical services more than the premiums, then they lose money and they have to raise the premiums the next year. So here there's an incentive not to provide medical care. And indeed, these managed care companies, these for-profit managed care companies, talk about the medical services they have to provide as a medical loss ratio. And they brag to their investors how low they can keep that. Some of them will brag that they have a medical loss ratio of only 70%, which means that 30% of the healthcare dollar is kept for administrative costs, for marketing expenses, and for profits. So you can see that the way they gain is by providing fewer and fewer medical services. Doctors now work for these companies, and in a sense, doctors are becoming double agents. On the one hand, they're supposedly agents for their patients, as the Hippocratic Oath requires them to be, and as thousands of years of history requires them to be. But on the other hand, we now find them being agents for their employers, the managed care administrators, who are pressuring them to do less and less and less for their patients.
Now, you're both advocating a single-payer plan. What does that mean, Dr. Angel?
Well, it means that the funds, the financing of health care, goes through a central agency. In the case of Medicare, for example, it's the Medicare and Medicaid, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. It goes through a central agency so that it can be distributed rationally and coordinated. And that is very, very much more efficient and cost-effective. If you look at Medicare, which is a single-payer system embedded within our larger market-based system, if you look at Medicare, its overhead costs are about 2%. Compare that with the private health insurance market, where the overhead costs right off the top. Now, there are more overhead costs as you go downstream. As Dr. Young said in his office, there's plenty of overhead costs. But right off the top, the managed care plans cream off for marketing, administrative costs, and profits on the order of 10 to 25%, 10 times as much as Medicare takes.
Dr. Young, is the single-payer plan that your group is advocating based on a plan that another country already follows?
Well, it turns out that every other country in the world that resembles us in the sense that they have an advanced industrial base and a democratic system of one form or another, every country, whether you're speaking of Western Europe, Scandinavia, Canada, Japan, has over the centuries, the first one was Germany in 1886, and the most recent one, believe it or not, is Thailand just last year. Every country has come to the conclusion that healthcare is so important to the society that it's the responsibility of that society to guarantee access to decent healthcare. That's in the national interest. That makes for a healthier population, a better workforce, and just a more congenial environment. And what we've been describing, the kind of struggle to get care and the disappointment, and indeed, we haven't even mentioned the bankruptcy, the number one cause of personal bankruptcy is unpaid medical bills in this country that expends twice as much as any other country each year on health care. Well, these countries have learned that by this one reform, and each country differs a little bit, and ours will differ from every other country, if for no other reason we have so much more resource to start with. Imagine having more than twice as much as most countries per capita to spend on health care, and instead of squandering it the way we do now, we would cover everybody and begin to use, and this is a very important concept, the best of modern medical science, best practices, population-based decisions, a new emphasis on prevention. And we could change the character of illness in our aging population and the experience with illness by having a system that ended the economic barriers.
The underlying problem is that we are the only advanced country that treats health care as a market commodity to be distributed according to the ability to pay, and not as a social service to be distributed according to medical need. That is the fundamental problem. And so we differ from every other country in the extent to which health care funds are diverted to overhead and profits.
My guests are Dr. Marcia Angel and Dr. Quentin Young of Physicians for a National Health Program. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Dr. Marcia Angel and Dr. Quentin Young of Physicians for a National Health Program, a group which advocates reforming our health insurance system by instituting a single-payer plan. What would a single-payer system mean for consumers on a practical basis?
Well, on a practical basis, they would have a right to comprehensive health care. Now, the package of health care could be designed in different ways. Medicare, which, as I've said, is a single-payer system, is not perfect. It doesn't cover everything. It doesn't cover prescription drugs, outpatient prescription drugs, and it should. It doesn't cover long-term care. It could. You could change Medicare in those ways, and I think that it should be, although the prices would have to be regulated. But you would design a system of benefits, and everyone would have a right to that. You wouldn't be giving them a voucher or giving them $1,000 to go out in the insurance market and buy whatever they could get for it. They would have a right to all of those services, and they would be paid for from the first dollar. There would be no deductibles, no co-payments. The way you would pay for it could differ. The other countries, all of which, the other advanced countries, have single-payer systems, collect the money in different ways, some of them from employers, some of them, as in Canada, directly from taxes, income taxes. Medicare here is payroll taxes. You could have the money come from a variety of sources, but the important thing is that it would be administered, it would be distributed and coordinated through one source. We now pay for our health care. We pay probably twice as much as we should. In multiple ways. In a sense, we're nickeled and dimed. We pay for it through our paychecks, through the prices of goods and services, through taxes at all levels of government, city, state, and federal. We pay for it increasingly out of pocket through deductibles and co-payments. So we already pay for it, and we pay in spades in many different ways. A single-payer system that makes the most sense. You would pay for it just once, and the most progressive way would be through an earmarked tax on income. But the total would be less.
There are so many Americans who are distrustful of the American government's ability to run a system, or, you know, particularly suspicious of government bureaucracies. So yes. If the healthcare system was basically put in the hands of a government-run bureaucracy, are you confident, Dr. Young, that that bureaucracy would be any better than the bureaucracies you face now?
Well, that's a very important question. Those of us who are advocates know that you can't have a conversation before the issue of government and taxes is raised. And ideologically, the conservative view that we need no government and we should cut all taxes is very powerful. But I find that almost an irrational position. First of all, our experience with government medicine is excellent. Let me give a few examples. The National Institutes of Health are a purely federal project, which is the envy of the world for distributing billions of dollars in research, and arguably the American predominance in the field of bioscience is based on that federal project called the National Institutes of Health. A few other examples. Medicare has been mentioned. It's flawed. Those flaws could be removed. I speak of the absence of a decent pharmaceutical benefit, the absence of long-term care, and not enough money in place for mental health needs. But those are easily remedied because of the vast amounts of money we have. Think also, if you talk government medicine, of our public health system. which in turn is undernourished, but nevertheless is our bulwark, all the more vividly dramatized in this period of bioterrorism. Our public health system is a defense of our nation and its public government tax-driven arrangement.
Now, your group, Physicians for a National Health Program, is advocating for a single-payer medical plan in the United States. One of the obstacles you would have to overcome to make that happen is dealing with all the medical insurance companies in the United States, which who would of course object to a single payer system because it means that their business would be out of business; they'd no longer be necessary. Do you think it's even conceivable in the United States that a single payer system would be seriously contemplated, given the amount of power that the insurance industry has?
That's a very pertinent question. The power is enormous. I would put it in terms of having corrupted our political process. The amounts of money the drug companies and the HMO organizations spend in winning congressional favor is obscene. And there's no denying a serious discussion of this reform bumps into the question, is it politically feasible, with many people who are even congenial to the idea saying that can't happen. My argument is that it must happen. Unless we reform our system, we will have an ever-increasing inequity here, which will be defined in terms of human suffering and early death, and that's beginning to happen. And that the American people won't stand for. We've had, Terry, equivalent mountains to climb. I'm old enough to remember the civil rights movement, which grew out of the legalized segregation and denial of voters' rights and other rights to people of black complexion. In 1950, which is like where we are now in the health system, people who felt this was unfair also felt there was no way to overcome the power of those who profited from the segregated system. And in a relatively short time, this country's capacity to meet great challenges was fulfilled.
I'm going to stop you. Are you suggesting that there needs to be some kind of mass movement, the equivalent of the civil rights movement, with protests and demonstrations, and in order for there to be change? Is that the way you see it happening?
I think that'll be part of it. That's the way this country works. We have freedoms, and we exploit them to change. That's the glory of this country. And the answer to your question is yes. I believe that that's happening. More and more, we see medical students. The American Medical Student Association holds twilight vigils all over this country. I've been to a half a dozen of them myself. These are medical students, the future doctors, saying we want a decent system. And I would point to Al Gore, the man who got the popular vote in the last election, who for up until his recent pronouncement was not a supporter of single-payer, said he's come to the conclusion, as he put it reluctantly, that it's the way we have to go. Well, that, if you're talking about political feasibility, if the premier leader, so to speak, of one of the two parties says he feels it's necessary, I think we have a different term of engagement.
The National Academy of Sciences is recommending that the Bush administration sponsor demonstration projects in five different areas of medical health so that new kinds of programs could be tested and then expanded if they succeed. And these areas include tax credits, expanding Medicaid and children's health insurance, alternatives to medical malpractice litigation, and so on. What do you think of that approach?
Well, let me say, I talked to the chair of that committee, who happened to be an old friend, Mr. Gail Warden, and I congratulated him on this prestigious committee's recommendation for experimentation and told him, as you know, all of the proposals that you're making are doomed to failure. Because these partial measures are exactly the problem we have. It's the multi-payer, patch quilt, jigsaw puzzle arrangement that is the burden on the American people. While I welcome this obviously important statement from a very prestigious source, at the same moment, we've done the experiment. The last 20 years has been a catastrophic event for the American people, a trial of for-profit, market-driven arrangements that has brought great suffering and is now in its final throes of failure, employers who are the heartblood of the market system are offloading their responsibilities to employees. They're either cutting the benefits or not covering the family or letting the worker pay for the premium. All of these systems are obviously not the answer to the problem. And I really want to emphasize the glory part of our message. We have the resources to fix the problem. We just have to get as smart as many other countries in allocating these wonderful resources.
Dr. Young, Dr. Angel, thank you both so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much, as usual,
thank
Terry.
Thank you,
wonderful
yes.
interview.
Dr. Marcia Angel and Dr. Quentin Young of Physicians for a National Health Program, which advocates reforming health insurance by instituting a single-payer plan. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.